Hi, welcome to episode 2 of season 3. Today's guest was encouraged to follow a traditional education and career path. He wandered off track from his late teens, unable to tame his free spirit and conform to ways of living that were inauthentic for him. He dropped out of Oxford University and chose instead self-selected education to support his wish to live in alignment with truth and creative integrity. He studied and practiced a variety of crafts and disciplines, including shepherding, fine woodwork, house restoration, Aikido, sociology, philosophy, and psychological astrology before beginning and completing a formal training in transpersonal psychotherapy. As an accredited practicing therapist, he also worked as a trainer in the field of addiction and included various aspects of his psychological learning within the extensive range of somatic workshops he led as a Five Rhythms teacher all over the world. He regards his life and work as inquiry into the physical, emotional, and psycho-spiritual nature and possibilities of living in awake awareness. His desire, his practice, and intention of all that he shares is in the continued learning of how to be at peace and in harmony with the divine mystery. He's the author of 2 illustrated children's books, a grandfather and a father. He is Alan Allard, and he is my father. Hi, welcome to Adulting with Ebony, the weekly podcast where my guests and I explore what it means and takes to be a kick-ass and kind adult these days. Expect deep, real and raw, as no topic is out of bounds. We want lives and businesses that are profitable, sustainable and fun. We want lives that feel as good on the inside as they perhaps look on the outside. And that means adulting the fuck up. I'm Ebony Allard. I'm an award-winning coach, author, and speaker. And if you're ready to implement, go to n2n365.club. For now, though, let's get on with the show. It feels weird to be asking you this because I know that you're going to tell me it's not a real word. What does adulting mean to you?
Well, it's interesting that you put it in that context of it not being a real word. And I would say, well, it is a real word, but it's a real word that was invented by the millennials, which is also not really a real word, but it is a word. And it was invented by the millennials to kind of reflect the fact what we used to call kind of late starters. So my generation is of a generation that kind of, you know, I left home pretty much by 16. By 21, I had my own apartment. I had work. I had a family by the time I was 23. And relative to our generation, you guys are very, very late. What adulting presumably means is it's connected to adult, which means kind of moving towards maturity. Mm-hmm. And some of those things of maturity involved getting your own place. But anyone who is an adult, they don't think of themselves as adulting. They just think of themselves as living. You know, that's basically what I would say. So it's kind of adulting. And also I do think because there's such a kind of culture of wanting to stay young and hip and be forever, that it's almost like there's a kind of self-consciousness to doing boring things like paying your taxes, or because actually somewhere in your culture there's this, which came from mine, I really admit that, own it, is that you kind of identify with being rebels in some way or something. So it's kind of, look, I'm not really that, but I'm just adulting because you have to, anyway, it's something like that.
But I get that.
Real word, but it wasn't.
It wasn't, no, it was just living. And now it's like, I could choose not to, maybe, and somebody else might take care of me. I don't know.
Well, somewhere in it, there's also something rather sweet because it's like the differentiation between being childish, which is a real pain in the ass, and being childlike. And there's a level that in the same way that being childlike is actually rather beautiful, and to be able to be childlike in whilst being a fully grown, developed person dealing with all the shit you have to deal with, is a pretty wonderful thing to be. Mm. Then my guess also that at its best there should be a word which kind of says to be an adult with ease, to be, you know, just to be independent, to recognize that the buck begins and stops with you, that all the stuff you project onto other people, all the kind of victimhood, the blame, all of that shit, is there's a kind of recognition, but rather than a resentful recognition, a rather glorious recognition that you have absolute freedom and therefore absolute responsibility. Anyway, something like that.
Yeah, and that for me is what adulting truly is. It's that balance, that fine line between, like, I am responsible for my reality, and that is making the money and keeping the roof over the head and all of those things, but it's also my joy. I'm also responsible for whether I'm having fun, whether I'm enjoying my experience, whether I feel like I'm living in a way that I'm proud of.
Okay, so I'm not really taking issue, but you know me well enough. So when you talk about those two adulting qualities, which really are about self to self.
Yeah.
I would say that actually, and particularly at this time when we notice it, what a true adulting would be to say, look, there are no parents. We cannot rely on the government or someone else to sort out equality, environment, the way that we live, injustice. All those things have to come for us. So in an old school way, I would say that what we used to talk about really walking your talk becomes very, very important. And I suppose, you know, thank you for getting me to that place where I would say that adulting would probably mean to walk your talk. Mm. To really live with integrity. Yeah, that's what I would say.
You mentioned at the beginning that you had a family by the time you were 23.
Yeah. I had a wife and you. Yeah.
How did becoming a father affect your relationship with that sovereignty, with that freedom, with that kind of walking your talk, that integrity that you were just talking about?
Well, I think it's more like, how did it affect my relationship with this thing that you call adulting?
Well, yes.
So it's kind of like, up until then, I was free to be blown around like a paper bag all over the world in different places. And so what it did, you know, up until then, pretty much up until about, yeah, probably just a while before that, I had been absolutely adamant that I was never going to get married, have children, get a mortgage, learn to drive, do any of those adult things. I was kind of off the hippie era. And by the time I was 23, I'd done all of those things. And that somewhere what it did is it grounded me. There's a level where, in order to truly operate in this world, you know, it's that marriage of spirit and matter. That's why we're here. Mm. And I feel like up until that time, with the benefit of hindsight, I was pure spirit in a sense. I didn't take the reality, the necessity of having to ground, of having to recognize the fact that this is finite, that I am here in this body, and that the infinite space that I perceive maybe through my eternal being, whilst it was a useful adjunct and a necessary part, wasn't the reason that I'd incarnated, which is actually to learn how to do this and how to operate full consciousness. And so your mother and you, in a sense, gave me the gift of having to show up.
Yeah.
Really having to show up here.
So that was how your journey into fathering happened and started, or like your relationship with it. You've now been doing it, like, in 4 weeks you will have been fathering for 40 years.
I know, it's arguable longer than that, because you were also in the womb, you know, where you were called teeny weeny. And I remember, in a sense, for the sense of responsibility began then. So I've already been doing it 40 years. It's okay. Arguable. Yeah,
okay. So you've been fathering for 40 years, and not just me, you've been fathering not just my biological and blended family, brothers and sisters, but also, I would say, hundreds of other people all over the world.
I would say that, yes. I think that's fair enough in terms of how we define fathering, really, which is, you know, again, a bit like a conceptual idea, but I suppose all words are. I mean, I don't know if the next question is, what does it mean?
No, it's less about what it means, actually, and what have you learned? Like, because, oh, this is uncomfortable. You're a much better father now than you were then. But you've learned a lot about fathering. You're an incredible father. Like, you are the personification of father to me now, and I am not that objective. I recognize that, but I also can be. And so I wondered if you would share a bit about not what the word fathering means, but what the embodiment of fathering is.
Well, I have no idea actually where the word father came from in that sense, which is interesting. How I see it is that it is really connected in a sense that when somebody, you know, to that thing I talked about, spirit and matter in a kind of a word. And so this is dangerous speak in the sense that it could be that there's a real confusion between being a man and masculinity and being a woman and femininity. In other words, between the principles that happen to be seen to be embodied in gender. So it's easy to talk about the kind of the yin and the yang in a way. And there is a level where up until that, in order to individuate this mass of flesh, spirit has to incarnate in it in a very clear way. One has to grow into that. There has to be a conscious meeting of mm-hmm. those things. And so when a baby is born, it's intrinsically tied in with its mother. They are one and the same. And at a certain point, that life form, that baby, has to learn how to come out into the world, one can say. Yeah, it's almost like to attenuate from the mother, and the otherness of the other parent mm-hmm. is in a sense almost like it kind of sets the conditions of how from then on one meets the rest of the world. So it's kind of important that in some sense it's the father that gives the sense of security, of boundaries, of how to relate to others. And for me, I think what mostly the role of father is the role of support. And so it, in a way, you say, well, I've got better at it over the years. It's like, well, that's one, that's an inevitable outcome of any kind of profession, trade, occupation that you follow, is that I've been a professional father. Just in the same way, it's like I cringe to think at how I must have been like as a therapist when I began.
Yeah,
but it's a necessary part, and one has to trust that the clients who come along in your first 5 years are there because that's part of their journey. Whereas the ones who come to me now, kind of 30 years on, they're meeting someone very, very different because there's all those years of experience. Yeah. And so I don't take it as any kind of insult that I'm a better father now, but in the same way that I say probably you attract the clients who are right for you in your first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth year of being a therapist, so too possibly the children come in that order too.
Yeah.
And there's a level where, you know, maybe you got exactly the fathering that you needed.
Absolutely. I remember screaming at you down the stairs in my teens about how much I hated you. And I remember you telling me that I picked you. That I sat up in a star and looked down and I picked you and I picked my mum and I picked it all so that I could have the exact human experience that I was supposed to have.
I remember a conversation very similar to that about that period where you said to me that you hate me. And I said to you, hang on, I am three things to you in your life. I am your father. And I am your friend, and I am your support system, right? And what you hate is your father, but I don't think you hate me as a support system and as your friend. And I would argue that the thing that I've been best at as a father is that I've always been there as a support. Yeah. So I remember, you know, the very first time you were brought back in a police car at about the kind of, you know, with the flashing lights and all the thing arrives, I remember this sense of absolutely being there for you, because that, in a sense, is something that kicked in very early for me. What I haven't been very good at is being able to be there, and I don't think anyone can do this, more for you than I was for myself. Mm. And the more intensively that I learn how to be there for myself, the more able I've been able to be in there for my five children.
And I think that's really important for everyone to hear, right? Like, they have to be more there for themselves in order to show up fully, whether that is as a father or a mother or a guardian or a friend or anything else, that we have to be there for ourselves first. Yeah.
And where I fell short with you as a small one is that I simply was overwhelmed by what it meant to attempt adulting with a baby and all the rest of that. You know, I don't want to go into too much personal detail about the circumstances, but yeah, definitely. But I think the support's always been there. I think that's a necessary factor in any type of father role, which is that there's a kind of no matter what you did, you or any of the children, or to a degree any of my students or any of my clients, it's like I will always be there. It doesn't mean I won't confront you in terms of meeting the truth of this, but I will always be there. I would never pick a side against you. A child.
And for me, that is why, where I have, as I've grown up and more as I've done the kind of work that I do, I've encountered other people who have spent a lot of time surrounded by or with the wounded masculine, or with not feeling supported and not feeling held, and that might come out of their mouths like there are no good men. And that has never been my experience, because I have had you and my brother and brothers and like all of that, and I have always felt supported, and so I'm really able to advocate for the whole masculine. And what I see is sometimes in that father role, whether there are children there or not, sometimes in that role of support, it is overwhelming for the masculine, and so they leave. And you didn't leave. You stayed. And that for me is, if I could turn this into a, like, what could you share with the masculine, you know, people who are experiencing the overwhelm that means that they lash out or leave or can't cope or, you know, do whatever overwhelm happens to them? Like, do you have any idea what it was that helped you to stay?
Well, again, so there's two, you know, again, I kind of touched on this earlier, mm. and I feel like now is a really good opportunity in a way to kind of zoom in. And it may, obviously there are many, many answers, and on any given day you find a different one. But the differentiation between being a man and that masculine principle seems really important here.
Yes.
And so that is like the pressures of how to be a man in a society where there is a real confusion about what that is, what it's meant to look like, what it's meant to feel like, how you're meant to act. And as an aside, it's why I really love the whole movement of non-binary and everything that's happening in the coming generations. I think it's bloody brilliant. And with this kind of Black Lives Matters, and, you know, what I would argue all lives matters, it's like, hopefully we'll also get to a place, not only where we're non-binary, but we're non-race, we're non-ethnicity, we're non-every bloody thing, because it's a ridiculous idea of cataloguing us in that way.
Yes.
So what I would say is that the difficulty of being a man, being a father, when you're not in contact with that masculine principle,
yeah,
I could see how that would be overwhelming. And I think that's why my own father left, in a sense, is that somewhere in my mother's eyes, he fell short of being a man, and he didn't have enough whatever, because I don't know him, but he was not able to tune into the masculine. But the masculine principle inside of me has always been very, very strong. Mm-hmm. And I think that was passed down kind of through a sensing, a smelling, a knowing from my own grandfather,
yeah,
of like what it means. And it's something very, very quiet. And I do believe it's that, in a sense, that vertical alignment, whereas you might say that the horizontal alignment is more like the feminine principle.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that this horizontal one is the masculine principle, and that still point in between the two, which is, you know, symbolized by the cross or the place in the heart, that real still point only comes about when there's a really beautiful balance of the masculine and the feminine. And I think I had that balance. I think that balance, you know, you could, you know, astrologically, my moon is in Cancer and my sun is in Leo, and but blah blah blah. But it's a very clear feeling in myself of what that masculine is, and it's a deeper knowing. It's not a choice. It's just not. I am. Or you could also say because my father left. You know, you could also say because, and I was never ever going to do that because I know the wound of it. So by his absence, he taught me how I didn't want to do fathering.
Yeah.
Long answer, sorry, but you know me. Yeah.
Don't apologize. I think there's some really, really interesting and powerful stuff in there. You know, the way that the world is evolving, with being able to hold more than one truth and things no longer being binary, and that just not being an option anymore, can only lead to more fascinating and curiosity. Yeah, and then a better place for, you know, and we have to look at the shadows and the shit and the stuff that hasn't worked in order to move through it, I think.
Well, yeah. So in the same way that you say, you know, you've got better at fathering,
yes,
then I would say that as humanity, we are getting better at adulting. And I was listening to kind of relatively young people yesterday in some kind of meeting I was, you know, people in between the ages of like 21 and 35 or something, talking about relationship and sexuality. And it's such a delight to hear the consciousness that these people have,
yeah,
relative to the kind of culture that I came from.
Yeah.
Where it was like we depersonalized the other gender. It was, I mean, it's just extraordinarily beautiful to me to see that. And you can see that it comes again out of, you know, like having grown up with horrendous stuff in a way that, you know, there's a level where if one was really precious, you could say, well, like the whole of sexuality and the sacred sexuality has all been kind of trashed, but actually in that happening arises the possibility of the sacred being seen. So, you know, I don't know, it's a bigger conversation, but yeah I do feel like we are moving on, and there are some real potential positives. Yeah.
And I feel like then this kind of idea of fathering as we move forward becomes far less gendered, right? And becomes about having a person that is the support and one that is the kind of the freedom or the nurture in, go on, there's so many things in your head.
but even more than that, one, it comes back again to the difference between the masculine and the feminine rather than the man and the woman. And so there's absolutely no reason why same gender couples shouldn't be able to have the role of fathering and mothering.
Yeah.
But also that those roles to some degree could be interchangeable.
Yeah.
What the bit which is unknown to me and I'm curious about, because that thing between kind of biology and thought, I suppose, or, you know, the kind of musings that I like, is that, okay, one, I've got to say that I'm of my culture. So the whole idea of test tube babes and stuff is just kind of, I'm not against it. It's just a bit freaky to me because I can't feel it. It's not in my known sphere of things, you know, of cloning, of all that stuff. It's you know, I'm really like just an old man, and like I don't get it. It's not that I'm against it. I just don't get it, right?
Yes.
But that what I'm wondering is that if you happen to have a baby that has grown inside your womb.
Yeah.
Whether the developmental stages of moving into, you know, from kind of nursery into childhood, whether those are as I'd always thought they would be, which is like, okay, if I grew inside the womb of this person, then this is the person with whom I identified, and the other parent, at least for the first couple of years, would be taking that role of fathering, because they would be the first other that I meet that I haven't been completely embodied and enmeshed with.
Mm-hmm.
So I personally think that, you know, that for the first 3 or 4 years of childhood, babyhood, whatever you call it, it may well be infancy, I think is the right word, that it may be necessary in a sense that the parent that did not carry the child is the one that takes the role of the masculine and so of fathering. I don't know how that works with, you know, single sex couples who adopt a baby, but again, my instinct would be to say it would be great if those roles were split.
Yeah.
You know, one was the predominant fathering role and one was the predominant mothering role until about the age of 3 or 4, so that there is someone safe outside for that infant to make that first step into adulting.
Can't believe I've got you using the word adulting.
Well, I don't like it, but I'm happy to use it in that context when we have a kind of agreed idea of what it might mean.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's another part of this developmental journey that we go on that you have often talked about really well. And it's the role. So there's this first part when we come out, we have this othering, we start to get to know the world, and we go on a journey of individuation.
Yeah.
And my favourite part is the bit where you get to metaphorically slay those parents so that you can step into your own individuation or adulthood or something, right?
Yes. Yes.
And you talk about this really well. Would you talk about that a little bit for me?
Your home thing was just going a bit weird. I don't know if we're losing connection.
Looks like it's back.
Okay. Well, first of all, you know, there's the kind of the side of it that I know best because it's most recent, which is where it's really important in that role of parenting, if we're doing these ting-tings, and fathering, and maybe mothering, that you kind of kick those people out of the nest to some degree, that you encourage them to fly, that you don't cling on to them, that it's an absolute, you know, in order for them to go into the stage of adulting, you have to cut the bits of, you know, you have to cut that umbilical cord to some degree whilst maintaining the support.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember there was kind of all deals I made with some of you as kids during, you know, the school holidays and stuff when you were getting older and you should have been at work. It's like, well, if you want to live here and you're not going to get a job, then you're going to pay me rent. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to live here and you're going to get some kind of employment, then you don't need to pay me rent. Which is kind of ass about face in one way, but it's really trying to foster this idea of self-sufficiency. So I don't know if I've lost track of the question, but it's something to do with the necessary, absolute necessary role of the parent, which is to prepare the infant, the child, the adolescent, the baby, to go out and find their own way in the world. And it's a very delicate balance, which is to be able to have created a good enough relationship that you can disagree with one of your children without disempowering them. Just say, I see it differently, but ultimately it's up to you as to what you do.
Yeah, and I think that's, I mean, more important than now than ever, right, is where the world is changing and there are younger people who have got a set of beliefs that are different from their parents, and yet they are in fear about what sharing those beliefs or speaking up and saying something different from what they were taught might mean for their relationships. And I believe that whether it's this or whether it's anything, you know, you're going to reach a place where you disagree with the people that raised you about something. And that's a necessary rite of passage.
It's really, really important. And as you speak, what I recognize, and obviously I've only got my vision on it, and you guys' perspective might be different. But when I look at the five of you, what I see is a relative fearlessness in terms of trusting your own creativity. Whereas I feel like what happened to me was that to some degree I moved into adulthood with a lot more fear around my own creativity, because it was constantly, I was constantly told that not only was that a bad idea, but that I was wrong in even thinking it. Whereas I would hope that what we did was to say, look, I don't, you know, to some degree, I would even say that now, you know, I've spoken to you about this. I don't really understand what you do, but I support you in doing it, you know.
and I would absolutely 100% say that you have, from the get-go, taught us to have our own minds, you know, right? Yes. Like even as a tiny child in a pram, when someone would ask, what's her name? You would say, she has a voice and she can use it. Yes. And ask her. And you know, you've really fostered that in all of us. Thank you. That's it's just been really, I genuinely didn't ever think that we would get to a place where, even though you don't really understand what it is that I do, but that you support it, that you would trust me enough actually to come on this podcast and to have a conversation with me and allow it to be aired. So I really appreciate you doing that for me and for everyone who gets to listen. Thank you.
It's been yeah, it's been fun. Thank you and good luck with it. I hope it goes really well. Thanks, Ebs. Lots of respect for what you do.
Thank you. I'm going to put links in where people can come find you, because I think you've got a new website and stuff like that. So I'll put all the links into the show notes and afterwards so that they can find it and know where to come.
Brilliant. Are we saying goodbye now?
Yes, you can stop talking. This has been Adulting with Ebony. I have been Ebony. You have been great. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for listening, for sharing, for rating and reviewing. If you have enjoyed this free content, please take a moment to rate us, to share an episode, to spread the word on social media, or to come find me on Instagram and tell me what you thought. On Instagram, I am @EbonyAllard, and I will see you in the DMs. Bye.